time, Josh, and when the seventh seal was broken, the angel said unto me, Come and see. And I looked, and I beheld a chick who was stuck in a door by her veil, and a group of people standing around whispering while a Power Ranger villain railed some chick. And it was completely random, but totally gnarly. Amen.
Hi, I'm Matt, and I prefer the Devil's Rock, because we all know that those Jesus rock bands can suck it.
That's true. This is Charlie Down in Austin. I'm sitting here on my chair made of people, and I was thinking if the alien intelligence that lives inside of Michelle Bachmann, if it comes out and says, like, twinkle tweet, I was like, nah, that can't be that cool.
The fuck?
And, you know, Krampus, you hardly know us on Horror Show Hot Dog. So this week we are coming in off of a high of having seen Krampus and seeing that Krampus Hell is yeah. doing well at the box office. And we will discuss it very thoroughly in the upcoming 3 hours, I think we had planned for the show tonight, boys.
Give or take.
Okay.
Well, the time change and then the currency exchange and then the dew point, I think you have to kind of factor those things in.
And carry the wand.
Yeah, and don't forget, don't forget nightlight savings time. That's where you plug in a bunch of lights in your house because it's fucking dark all the time. By the way, guys, if you're not in Minnesota, and God love you if you're not, it gets dark at fucking 4:30 here now.
Yeah.
And does it really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. Hmm. It is literally dark at 4:30, which makes everybody go, well, oh, I suppose I should be getting home. I mean, it's, 6:30. Never mind, I guess we should make dinner instead.
Yeah, it's like...
it fucks with everything.
Must be well past a bedtime, like, it's... hibernation time. There's nothing quite like sitting at a desk and, you know, sitting at a work desk, you always are feeling your life tick away from you in tiny increments, even if you enjoy your job, right? But as you're sitting at your desk and watching the sun go down,
yeah.
It's like, holy shit, am I the guy in the, like, 80s movie, the, like, the shitty dad who needs to learn a lesson?
And the cat's in the cradle in the silver spoon.
Well, then sometimes sometimes at this time of year, if Conlon was out of town for the Christmas holiday, I'll work a little extra time because I don't need to rush home or whatever. And it'll be one of those things where I'll get to work before the sun is completely up, and I will leave work after the sun has gone down. And it's like that is no way to be. It's just right.
Yeah,
it really feels ugly.
That's tough. That even wears on me occasionally. I like being up at night. But so I don't have like the, what is it, seasonal affective disorder or whatever the fuck they call it. But because I have friends who just as soon as it gets to about this time of year for the next 3 months, it's just real hard to get them to smile because they just hate not, they need that vitamin D, whatever.
I've heard that some of the people you hang around with crave that vitamin D.
Am I right? But yeah,
you ain't right.
This is actually, and this is also a tough time of year for us performer types to get people to come out and see a show, because if you get home from work and it's dark out already, you feel like you should be hunkering down and staying home, despite the fact that the show does not start any later than it did 3 months ago.
Right.
But it seems more cheery to go out and see something when you can walk down a nice well-lit sidewalk to the theater, as opposed to, like, bundled up and hunched over in the dark to a theater.
Right.
So.
It kind of depends on the theater, I guess, but.
Well, the theaters I play in.
Hunched over in the dark, wearing a trench coat, making odd squelching noises.
Yeah, also, I'm not performing on stage in the theater. I'm performing near the theater with my trench coat, if you know what I mean.
I mean,
he performs in the audience, basically.
It's performance art. And with quick thinking, I changed that public nudity charge to public urination. Anyway, speaking of theater things... those of you that follow us on social media, and if you don't yet, why not? Josh has been telling you to do that for literally years now at the end of each episode.
It's true.
I did share the link for the Dino Cult of Doom short that I was in, just barely, which is why I didn't make a huge deal of it. That was part of the Encyclopedia show in Minneapolis here last month. For those that don't know, really briefly, Encyclopedia show is a national show with several locally run performances, and they have the same theme at each show each month all over the country, and then you just, depending on which city you're in, you see different performers doing different takes on that. The theme for last month was cults. So I posted a little 10-minute video made by Expensive Wino Productions, who are super funny and cool people. And, yeah, it's in no way a scary thing. It's just a ton of fun and has lots of great little jokes about dinosaurs and cult-like behavior. So if you haven't had a chance to check that out, it's on our Facebook, or I think I even posted it on the website. So, yeah, check it out. And if you like it, give the Expensive Wino folks a like on Facebook or send them a message saying you saw it and you dug it, because they're good people.
Charlie, you watched it. What did you think?
I liked it. I thought it was charming. There were certain points where, like, certainly for scale and budget and all those type of things, you take all those things into consideration. Pardon me for just a moment.
Bless you.
So people be sneezing. People be sneezing all up in my crib. So anyway, so when you take those into things into account, for sure, I think if there was, you know, higher quality film or a little bit of sound stuff and just, you know, some kind of polish and spit type stuff, you could have certainly helped it a little bit. Because, I mean, the writing itself is good. The writing itself is funny and charming. It was just, there's a couple parts of it that just sort of, that did feel a little bit too lo-fi, where it takes away from the humor. And, like, because the humor is sharp, it's quite funny at parts, you know, and really good. That, like the voiceover, for example, the voiceover is just sort of like, it doesn't sound like somebody doing a voiceover. It just sounds like a dude. Like, I'm a dude. Yeah. And it's like,
yeah, and it's not to be like an apologist, but the guy that makes it was just decided, I just have to post this. He right after we finished shooting, because he planned on, just, it had a debut in a very rough form at the show. And then he was going to take it home and actually put polish on it. And then his dog went into, like, the emergency vet and was in and out of that, like, every 2 days for thousands of dollars worth of medical stuff
Lord.
2.5 weeks. And the dog is finally back home, like, the day he posted it. And he was like, honestly, it's getting to the point where I just have to put this up. So, like, normally there would be a little more shine on that apple. But he was like, I just hope you guys understand. We're like, of course, dude. Like, you know, that's just fine. So, yeah, he was like, fuck it. Just give me how you want your names to show up in the credits. I'm just going to post this thing. So it is a slightly unfinished product. But I think, like you said, Charlie, you're right. The humor comes through.
The dog pixelation, I wrote that down, and I thought that was really funny.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah, which is, that's the dog.
And it's just, and the like, it's like, well, as you're telling us this, you're literally sitting on a chair made of people. I just went, I'm like, the drink I had in my mouth was out of my lap, because I was just like, that made me laugh real hard. That was really funny. So, I mean, overall, I thought it was very cool. I will definitely say this. There's a lot of sincerity to it. And, like, and that's really cool.
Sure.
And the internet and the world does not need more ham-fisted, winking, too cool for school assholes. Like, we're at capacity. You know, like, you know, when the Starbucks are full, the douches will walk the earth. You know, like, it's just, we've got enough of that already. We need more sincerity in this. This thing has got sincerity to it, so I think it's really cool in that respect.
Yeah, I was really, really happy to be a part of it. Yeah, cool stuff. You can find Expensive Wino on Facebook and check out the things they do, all of which are pretty dope. We should talk about a horror short that I feel more comfortable reviewing, because I'm not in any way attached to
it. A horror short with which Matt is not affiliated. A Slumber Party from Hell, or La Fiesta de Dormir del Infierno.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. I like Slumber Party just translate as Party of to Sleep.
Oh. Yeah.
Because why wouldn't it?
Sure.
So you got girls having a slumber party. They make a girl do Bloody Mary. Nothing happens. And then the babysitter's like, actually, the one that you gotta watch out for is Ugly Aggie. If you're all, I hate you, Ugly Aggie, in the mirror, then she shows up and kills you. And the girl's like, that sounds pretty sweet, I'll give that a shot. And she does, and Bloody Aggie shows up and stretches her mouth out, and then the girl is behind the mirror.
Yeah, see, the thing, this was like, this was a fantastic choice that was like, and then they made the wrong one. Whereas, like, the thing in the mirror is, the idea is super, super cool. It's remarkably cool. That thing, like, in the water, and, like, it looks kind of, like, watery and, like, real freaky. That was awesome. But it was preceded by a stretchy face, and I was just like, oh, man, I thought that was bad. I was trying to decide ahead of time, like, how mean I wanted to be. And I was like, I think I'm going to be mean. It's like, don't fucking do that. Like, if you can't do it, don't. Because that little girl could have made a big expression, big reaction before getting trapped in the mirror, and that would have done the job. Like she could have just been, yeah, she could have been so terrified. And you're like, what the hell did she just see? And it's sort of like, and then it goes back, and the next girl comes to the bathroom, and you see her in the mirror. And you're like, whoa, that's no good.
I like that better. The reason I picked this one was because, you know, I've watched piles of these now, trying to find ones that I think would be fun to watch for the show, and it is a very standard, you know, Bloody Mary type movie. And or short, and then yeah, you get the like, oh, there's the monster, like, you know, everything is just exactly what you'd expect, and it's done fine. And then you get that little thing where, oh fuck, the next girl goes in and she's trapped, like drowning in the mirror, which implies this whole other level of fucked up in this.
And then gets yanked back too.
Yeah, and like that to me, I was like, oh, that made this stick with me. Well, and I think now that you say it, Charlie, that I do like your idea of, had we just not seen anything, but maybe just a widening of the eyes from that girl and a scream or something, and then when the next person runs into the bathroom, you see her trapped and pulled away in the mirror, that might be more effective. But I really liked that they went that extra level beyond just boo with something being in the room, which we all saw coming a mile away.
That mirror thing was something special.
I really liked
that. That was really nifty, because it's like, like, well, what's your imagination going to tell you? Like, nothing good. It's all scary in there. But, I mean, it was preceded by that boogly, which I just didn't, I don't know, man.
It's super weird that this has that amazing idea and pretty damn decent execution with the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And also the, like, flip-top head monster.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that is so strange. It would be like if that He Dies at the End one had a beautifully fully rendered CGI thing and then the weird Muppet popping up at the end.
Right.
It's just like, dude, have faith in your idea. And because you're right, like, the closing the mirror and the thing is there and it goes bleh is really, really standard.
Yeah.
And I think even for people who haven't watched 100 horror shorts in the past year, that's a really common trope. So, like, Go beyond spooky face now, dudes. And they did, but then they had the spooky face in there, too.
Well, you know, and also, I like the way that the kids were written. The kid, they weren't so shrill, which I thought was nice. Because that's
easy. Yeah, they were total bastards, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like, we see that too often. I like that, because to me, that feels like it takes confidence to write them so that they're just kids. Like, they're giggling and they're laughing and they're kind of... they're joking with each other, and they're doing this and that thing, whatever else. They're like, it's like, oh, you a bitch, blah, 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 blah. You know, there's not like, they're just little honky children. They're not really, like, they're not offensive. They're just normal, and I like the fact that they were not over the top, because that would have been easy to do, and they didn't do that, so that was cool.
So what do you think? Watch it or no?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's short enough that it's not anything special until it is a little bit special. And I think that's worth 3 minutes.
Do these guys have, just by the by, do these guys have anything else floating around?
I don't remember, because when I first watched this to put it into my folder full of links to short films, it was a long time ago. So I don't remember if I clicked through to find more stuff from them. But I would be curious to see what else they might have. So maybe I'll look into that this week.
Just curious, because I would say give it a go. But I would, like I said, my immediate thought was... like, was it Patrick Ray, who did Nailbiter, the feature length, and then did a bunch of shorts. Some of his shorts I'm not a huge fan of, but other ones I just love, 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 love. But it's neat to see a body of work where you can see some other stuff they've been working on, you know. And so that's what I was thinking, like, maybe these guys have got some other stuff they've been working on, you know, that kind of deal.
All right. That makes sense.
So now cool. No, Josh says the movie thing. No.
What happened? We are cautiously intrigued. So, first movie up that we are going to discuss, we just kind of have to, because we're kind of chomping at the bit.
We're going full chort.
We're chortling at the bit to discuss Krampus, or Krampus, sure, or Krampus, I suppose.
Also good.
Yeah. Krampus, new movie, came out this past weekend, and we went and saw it, because that's rad. Directed by Michael Dougherty, who directed Trick or Treat, which is one of my favorite horror films of all time.
Yes.
Me too, yeah.
And in this one, he's going for a more... I mean, you say like a family-friendly horror movie, and that just doesn't sound right, but I don't know how else to describe it. It's the Gremlins, I mean, it's more, kind of horror movie.
Yeah, it's more approachable to a younger audience, which a lot of horror used to be. You know, like, that's the thing that I think people forget when they talk about, oh my god, you let your kids watch horror movies. It's like, that used to be what people did. Horror movies were meant for kids to go get a little spooked in, like, the 70s, you know? And so I think you get something closer to sort of just a dark fairy tale.
Yeah.
You know, like, calling it a kid's movie doesn't do it justice,
it doesn't do it justice either, no.
Because there's plenty of mature themes, and it's scary enough that you don't watch it and just go, meh.
You know, and even in a theater full of adults, there were a few moments where people just been like, whoa!
Yeah.
As something happened, and it was super satisfying.
So I'm not sure what to call it. I just kept saying, like, it's a more, less bite than regular horror. It's, you can like it if you're not a horror fan. It's like Gremlins. You like Gremlins? Go see it.
Yeah, I do think that's the yardstick I'm going to use to measure this movie when I try to describe it to people, is be like, do you like Gremlins? And if you don't like Gremlins, I don't know why I'm talking to you. So, like, so you know how Gremlins is great?
Yeah.
Then you'll like this. Shut up. And, like, that's all you really need to know, I think.
Figure, like, 80s Tim Burton in, like, the height of his powers crossed with Gremlins, and you're almost there. Because you have these... And, you know, like, there's legend in the DNA of this movie, for sure. There's a little Dark Crystal in there.
Yeah.
Maybe it does just kind of awaken some of that 80s sensibilities of when kids' movies could terrify the pants off kids.
Right? So I would say the other thing, too, that I noticed, especially because we saw it Thursday and then saw it again on Saturday, because I had to see it on Thursday because I was not going to wait another moment. It's just like, nope.
I am jealous that you got to see it twice already, because as soon as it was over, I was like, I really want to go see this again just to digest it more.
But it was what was neat, too, was I bought the soundtrack, which is on iTunes now. Scream Factory or Death Waltz, or somebody's putting out in January, putting out a double LP of it with some beautiful album art. But anyway, the score is on iTunes now. Listened to that a bit on Saturday, and that was nice. And but watching it again, like, one of the things that really stuck out to me as far as the same thing with Trick or Treat, where Michael Dougherty, like, knows atmosphere like a motherfucker. Like, it's just the way he lights stuff, the way he films stuff, the way he puts stuff together. Like, there's not a lot of, like, empty space. Like, everything is rendered and everything is thought through. And it's just, like, there's so much going on in the... like, what you're seeing is not just the actors and the set pieces and the whatever. It's, like, this fully realized world. Like, all the corners and the nooks and everything is thought of. And to me, it's, like, that is admirable. That's absolutely admirable. Because it's super, super easy, I would think, to not... take that stuff into consideration, to just be like, oh, house, oh, hallway, snowy bank, dark tree, whatever. But in this situation, it's no.
And I think that lends to the idea that this movie, despite having some broadly comedic moments and some really kind of broad characters, seems to have a deft touch about them.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, you have David Koechner doing his best Randy Quaid from National Lampoon's, right? You know what I mean? Like, he is kind of just being that guy, and yet you don't write him off completely. You start to go, oh, he's that guy, and that gets played for laughs, but then, like, when shit hits the fan, he's got a little depth there.
Yeah, they're actually people.
Yeah,
like, they start out just a little bit turned up from what you would recognize as normal
human
behavior.
Yeah, they're like 10 degrees off of alignment at first or something.
It's kind of the same thing that, at least for me, that Cooties did, where you start with these characters and you're like, okay, we know exactly what these guys are like. And then you give them a little depth and you let them interact like people and you don't make them be shrill and shitty.
You let them breathe. Yeah.
Like the two girls, Stevie and Jordan, could have been the asshole cousin from Home Alone.
Those things could have turned into a Slate article real fast.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure there's some skinny jeans wearing motherfucker that's writing it up right now.
Sure. No, you're probably right, Charlie, because there's nothing at which people are unable to be offended.
Well, Krampus got wrong about gender identity. Like, go fuck a tree.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
Yeah, please don't
and
do
it's
that.
Like, you're missing the point.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, like, they could have... they could have been just over the top shitty, because you recognize that archetype, but then you see when shit starts going south, you see the fear in their eyes, and
you see when whichever one of them is reading the letter to Santa.
Yeah, there's
that they steal
very
from.
Oh,
extra real.
That scene the second time around gave me a little bit of the a little bit of the, somebody's cutting onions in here. Because, like, it is, that is, you want to talk about sincerity from Michael Dougherty? Like, that letter is amazingly sincere. Oh. Not just the writing of that, but the look on the older sister's face and the look on the parents' faces. It's like, here's some truth heaven. And it's sort of the,
just everybody realizing what a piece of shit they've been.
Well, and then, so the look on the, so there's,
you know,
two,
to a greater or lesser degree.
There's those two moments. One is that shot of the sister, like, oh, I wish we used to hang out like we used to, which is a simple idea from a narrative standpoint. We're talking about family drama, but, like,
sure,
fine. But the look on her face is really well done. And then the thing where Toni Collette and Adam Scott are sitting by the window, and he makes this kind of dummy joke, just a dorky joke. And she kind of laughs, and they kind of look at each other like, oh, yeah, that's how that works. Like, I make stupid jokes, but you still laugh because we love each other. And it's like you, the three of us know this. We've gotten women in our lives at different points that are way cooler than we deserve, but they laugh at our shit, and it works out pretty well, you know, in terms of that dynamic. Yeah. It's sort of like, and that to me is very honest. Like, that's a very honest thing. It's a very human thing. It's not cheesy. Like, it could have been cheesy. This is not. And I love that. And that to me is the undercurrent of why then the horror and the darkness and the atmosphere work better, is because they aren't just cardboard cutouts.
And that was one of my concerns going in, because at first it was like, they're making a movie called Krampus. Holy shit. And as a lot of people have said online, you know, when we've talked about it, and, you know, I've seen other people post about it, people that know what Krampus is, which is getting to be a larger and larger number of people, are like, holy shit. And then it's like, they watch the trailer and they go, but wait, is it a comedy? And it's like, well, partly. You know, again, it's that whole problem of trying to figure out what to call it. But they do that. It's a black comedy, you know, kind of weird, whatever you want to call it. But they make no bones about the stakes being very high.
Yeah.
Almost immediately. As soon as something goes wrong, it, you know, the first person killed is the older sister who's, what, I don't know, 14?
Yeah.
Something like that. And it's, again, they've found my sweet spot. You've killed a child. But you know what I mean? Like, that is, for the first kill of a horror movie, bold move, man. Like, nope, this is how it goes. You at this point, anyone that's out there gets just killed, and, you know, oh my god, the fucking Kellen and Hobbs snowman. Like, Josh and I had one of our sweet little date moments of turning to each other, because is it Adam Scott that says the noodle incident?
Yeah.
And there's all those evil snowmen on the front lawn, and then he says something about the noodle incident, and we both just look at each other like, yes.
And how subtle was that? It's lovely.
But yeah, exactly. But it wasn't like, you know, wink. Like, it's just perfect.
There is a refreshing lack of, like, winking meta bullshit in this.
Yeah, man, very, very little, actually.
Like, in the same way that Trick or Treat does, you will get, like, a whiff of a reference or an homage or just something that inspired him, but he doesn't go, like, hey, remember this movie that you loved? You know, I watched it too. And, it, you know, like, not to...
He doesn't Tarantino his references.
Well, not to shit on Tales from Halloween, because we enjoyed that pretty decently, but that's the difference between Trick or Treat and Tales from Halloween. I watched all these movies, I absorbed these references, and I'm putting my own spin on it, instead of, like, hey, I watched all these movies, and now I'm just spitting references at you.
Yeah.
Right.
So to get, for people who don't watch the movies, but for this one, you ought to go, guys.
Actually, anyway. we should insert say too, right here, actually, that, like, if we're going to get into what I think is the most important part of talking about this, besides just sort of, which is that talking about the ending, which, so people should be warned, that I would like to get your all's brains take on that, on the ending, because I think it's important.
For sure.
If you've not watched it,
as always, we are very spoiler-heavy.
Yeah, there will be spoilers, so you can pause, you can go to your theater, you can watch it, it'll be fine.
But speaking of going to the theater, real quick, we should say, it is so great to go see a horror movie in a theater that's a really good horror movie. So, if you are a fan of horror, and why are you listening to this if you're not, take this opportunity to support a horror movie in a theater that's actually good. That gets us more horror movies in theaters. And then the B to that statement is, thank you everybody that came out in Minneapolis to go see this movie with us.
Yeah, we had a great crew. Yeah,
we had a really fun crew of people, and we had some repeats and some totally new people. There, I met people for the first time at this little get-together. And we went for drinks afterwards, and I bought a couple pitchers of beer, and we sat around and talked about the movie for like an hour. It was fucking great. This is exactly what horror movies are to me, is a fun thing to do and laugh and cheer and sit down afterwards and go, oh shit, that part, oh my god, that reminds me of this movie. Wasn't that from 1982? Nope, bullshit. That was in, like, we did all that shit, and it was so fucking satisfying. So again, thank you everyone that came out with us to see this movie in the theater. We'll do another one of these at some point, but yeah, just briefly, just to say, yeah, see this in a theater if you can, and if you have the option, bring some friends, because it's even better.
Yep, so the premise of the movie is kid who still believes in Santa, has family that, you know, is kind of dysfunctional, got his older sister who's a little bit distant, you got your dad who's always on the road, and mom who's busy being Pinterest mom, and, well, she totally is.
And, oh, she is, but I also like that older sister isn't a douche.
No,
she is simply, she has simply hit puberty.
She's not...
Which makes her unrelatable to younger kids.
Yeah, she's only mean in the sense that she's just completely, like, uninterested in him.
Exactly. Because she now cares about boys, and that is totally foreign to this boy who is too young to care about girls.
Yeah.
And so you have this gulf of relationship that just suddenly just doesn't work anymore, because he's like... You know, it's the same thing that I watch with, like, my kids, who are 8 years apart. Why don't you want to play pirates? And she's like, because I want to go talk to cute boys. And like that just, there is no way to translate those two things between a 9-year-old and a 16-year-old. Like it just, they don't grok each other anymore. That's just not a thing. And I think that exact relationship with a smaller age gap is what you see in this movie, which is no malice, no shittiness. No one has to be screechy. They've just drifted apart because they are in different places in life. And that's really pretty cool.
I think it's illustrated very well with the mom character too, with Toni Collette, is that, like, you know, she spends all this time doing these, like, fancy, you know, decorations and all the foods and stuff. It's like she's not like, you know, replace love with food necessarily. It's a, I have spare time on my hands because I can't keep any of these damn people in one room. And so it's like, this will be the nice thing. Oh, no, this will be the nice thing. And it's like, and she doesn't get overly dramatic or histrionic about it. And she just is, it's just, there's a resignment to it that's not over the top. It's not melodramatic. And I really like that. And out of all the characters, she was one of those ones that, like, in the hands of a less capable actress, I don't know that it comes across as sweetly and as authentically as she did. And I thought she did a remarkably good job. I really liked her. Foiled, on the other side, by the crazy aunt. It was just like every horror movie ridiculous body character is like wrapped up in that woman. It's
like, yeah. And that's fine.
So visiting for the holidays come the mother's sister and her husband and like five kids ranging from baby to Augustus Gloop, you know, and they're the kind of, you know, Republican, Hummer-driving, conservative, like, gun-toting caricatures, except not every line out of their mouth is that.
Yeah.
So they do get some time to actually just be people. So that's pretty impressive. But anyway, everybody's unhappy, and kid gets mad about the whole, you know, Christmas having fallen apart and loses his faith. Tears up his letter to Santa and throws it to the wind, which summons Krampus and his entire atmospheric entourage, and then
so good.
Sheer he lunacy posse, happens for an hour. Krampus rolls deep. God damn it, dude.
I will have to say, so this is,
I'm gonna tell in stereo.
So once the shit kind of goes sideways, the power's out and everybody's isolated. We lose teenage daughter pretty quickly. Back at the house, one of the scenes where the first time it was just me and Conlon, and then on Saturday we dragged Kristen, and then she ended up really enjoying it. But like on Thursday when Conlon and I would go, all the family has fallen asleep in the living room, you know, and like, but they didn't keep the fire going, damn it. And so then you see the chain come down, which you see in the trailer. Which, by the way, anybody, if you've not seen the newest version of the trailers, don't watch them. They show way too much stuff. But anyway, so like, you see the little chain comes down.
The screenshot for the trailer is...
Yeah, it's very frustrating. It's like, why are you...
It's anyway, the clown face. That's one of the best surprises.
I know, man. It's just like... But so anyway, like the little chain comes down in the chimney. It's got a little hook on the end of it. And up the chain, there's a little gingerbread cookie like tied in the chain, like wrapped around the chain. And it's kind of swinging down there. And Conlon, like we're in an Alamo, so you're not allowed to talk, but like Conlon just completely... without censor button whatsoever, just goes, well, that isn't good. it's like you're tensing up, kind of reaching for my arm a little bit, like oh, here we go. it's like,
nice.
It's like, this is, but that's the joy of a movie like this. Is
and while you and I and everyone we went to the movie with and Conlon all understood that never trust a cookie on a chain dangling from a chimney, Augustus Gloop is like, hey,
it's
free
like,
cookie.
Sniff, sniff, sniff. Yeah. Ooh, cookie. And then off we go, and it's just like it's one, you know. And that's another thing. It's like it is one after. Like, there is no once things get moving. Once Krampus has descended, like we get a good shot of him jumping from house to house earlier on with the daughter. But like once things are going, it's just going. Like, we go, and it's one thing after the other. You get
well, there is
labyrinth
this...
influence in there, and you get. God almighty, it's just... It's
a little bit of Tremors, even?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's just like, it's goes and goes and goes.
There's a never-ending amount of imagination on display here.
It's very creative.
All of his crazy, you know, toy-based things, where you have the Jack-in-the-Box and the, like, goth angel from...
Oh, that fucking Jack-in-the-Box like is going to haunt my dreams.
So they're from, like, the Guillermo del Toro... toy box.
Yeah.
But then you have like the robot and the gingerbread guy, which are more from like a Jumanji or Zathura kind of
like Joe Dante kind of deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And it all blends together because he's just got this basic idea of anything that Santa does, this is his dark mirror, so we have all of Christmas to pull from.
And you get, the idea that anything can happen. So,
yeah.
Excuse me. So you don't have like, oh, that's... he doesn't have that power. Like, no, you just... at once you have a living, breathing, or, well, whatever, gingerbread man going batshit, you kind of go, okay, I guess I don't know what to expect anymore from this movie. Like, I thought I was going to watch a weird, horned, evil Santa fight people. All right, I guess I'm just going to kind of buckle up and see where this takes me.
For the most part, he just hangs back.
Yeah, but then, you know, by the time then you're watching three little gingerbread men with a nail gun trying to kill David Koechner, you are loving every moment of it. It's amazing.
There is real malice to those little guys.
Yeah,
which
yeah,
keeps there's actual them from consequences. Being just silly, right?
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, that's the like I said, the stakes are high. You know, people get picked off in this movie. This isn't like, oh, we just have to keep running from A to B, staying one step ahead from the silly monsters. The silly monsters generally take out one person in at least every other skirmish.
Yeah, they're
effective little fuckers. Yeah.
So the only person who knows what's up is Grandma, who stops the movie in the middle to tell the story of her encounter with Krampus, at which point we drop into just goddamn gorgeous either stop motion or CG.
Well, it's a mix of styles, I think, isn't it? I mean, like it's multiple things going on there. This is really lovely.
Yeah, it's fucking beautiful.
Yeah, it's
fucking beautiful. Sorry, I was just listening to the words coming out of my face, and I was appalled for a second.
Was it
anyway?
I was going to say with the grandma character, I like the very beginning of the movie where, like, we're introduced to all our people for the first time, outside of Max and his parents, who he was, like, fighting in the nativity scene, which, the mall sequence at the beginning, which was so great. But at the house, you go across the kitchen, and there's all these baked goods everywhere. Like, she's just been baking, like, you, just one thing after the other. Just piles and piles and piles and piles. And she's just, like, very lovely, older, stately woman, this older lady, and she's baking away into these things. And then in comes the family, and they're already in the middle of an argument and talking about the thing that happened in the mall. And then whatever else, like, oh, well, you know, they don't make too much stuff. Like, you know, we bought some cookies at the store, and it's just like, just the look on the lady's face. It's just sort of, I don't know, there's something really great about that. That it's stately older lady actress. It just sort of captures that thing. But then, yeah, when she gets into the thing of, like, telling them the story, her voice, like, she can read all the things. Like, that voice is amazing. oh, just to listen to her, it was really cool.
Although, Matt, you should speak briefly about Matt and Megan, who came with us to watch the movie. Had she was the one who recommended Banshee Chapter, but she and Matt both had this issue with Grandma speaking German and people speaking English back to her, etc. But do you want to get into that for a bit, Matt?
Just real briefly, just because I've seen this in movies. I don't know that I've ever seen it in real life. Where, but it's a very common thing in movies where someone goes, "Hey, Grandma, how's it going?" And she's like, "Erste flirte parente," because she's the Swedish chef. And then, you know, they go, "Oh, you know, pretty good, but, you know, math homework tonight. But, you know, how's Grandma doing? Herdy, herdy, gurdy." And it's like, what? Like, who does that? If you're both so fluent in both languages that you can both understand each other flawlessly.
See, what? the one that I've seen is that it mixes back and forth. Like, my sister-in-law is from Argentina, and her parents are both fluent in both English and Spanish, and I think her father speaks a couple of the languages, but I've seen that where, like, you get all of them going, and, like, you know, there'll be some English and some Spanish and some other things, but it'll go back and forth. Like, there's times where my sister-in-law, Anna, will argue with her mother in English or her mother speaking to her in Spanish, then they switch the roles, and you're sitting at the side, it's like, well, I gotta sit down because I'm dizzy, because I'm a dumb American, and we don't do languages too well, but, and so like, but so I've seen it go that way, although, hey, you're right, in movies it is a bit of a deal. They kind of...
It's convenient to plot in movies, usually, but like, I feel like if Grandma is perfectly fluent in English, which you'd have to be to have her level of understanding, it's odd that she would never speak it. And by the way, she speaks it very, very well the one time she does. So,
see,
like,
I kind of
thought
that served the characterization. If we're kind of reading in between the lines of how this family dynamic is working right now, I think...
It just gives her some distance
I think, like, Grandma's living with them. She's seeing that Mom and Dad are unhappy, and they're both super busy. And she sees how deeply unhappy the kid is.
Yeah.
So she's not really talking to anybody. She's kind of retreated into her Dutch or German or whatever the hell she's speaking. And he is the only one who bothers to talk to her. And so she has this kind of special bond with him. And when Adam Scott starts speaking German or whatever to her, that to me signified this kind of seeing her again for him.
And that may be entirely accurate.
That's
you
a
know.
Very good thought, Josh. I like it. That's cool.
Yeah. I dig that, but I mean, at the same time, I have to wonder about the X number of time prior to this moment where it's like, Mom, how come you stop talking in English? Because I speak English without even having an accent, so clearly I've learned English well, and that's the kind of thing that has to happen at home for that to happen. So, the fuck?
Well, I mean,
I just feel like there's a missing conversation there. I don't know.
My
such a minor quibble.
Had a similar dynamic with his grandma. She spoke mostly Dutch, and so he would speak Dutch to her, and she'd speak Dutch to him. I guess he wouldn't speak English to her and have her speak Dutch back.
That's the
which
part
is the
that
thing
I think
that's
is
getting
weird.
You. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think it'd be perfectly fine if grandma prefers to speak her native tongue. Cool. Get that. You know, like, I've got plenty of friends who have family members that, you know, Spanish is their first language, you know, from, you know, like, Angus's wife is Latina. So she speaks Spanish natively. Her mom speaks it natively. So, yeah, like, they speak Spanish around the house when they're talking to grandma or sometimes with Rita. But if someone that speaks English comes into the room and they speak English to Rita, Rita doesn't respond in Spanish and they respond back in English, even though people could do that because they both understand both languages. That's just weird.
For some reason, Matt, when you were laying that out, I was really hoping the next thing you're going to say was, and they respond back in, they respond back in whale, like, like, it's like, I knew that's not what you were going to say, but I just really hope it was. You know, I mean,
they would, but it takes so long to say anything.
These just whale conversations take for fucking ever.
Long-winded motherfucker. They're like Ents. Ents of the sea.
Well, the other thing with the dynamic with the little boy and the grandma, too, is it feels early on that, like, he talks to her and everybody else talks at her. Like the thing with the cookies, you know, like, oh, we go buy cookies at the store. Like, are you fucking kidding me? She's got like 10 hours worth of baked goods on this counter that she's been working on.
Yeah, she has a really great look at that
she's
moment.
Just
like,
oh, well, like, they would kind of, you can kind of, because this is so well done with the characters, you you can imagine the rest of their lives instead of them just being these kind of caricatures. So you can imagine him coming home like, hey, mom, how you doing? Like, oh, you know, he's like, okay, well, that's great. Well, you know, I got to go take a business call. And that's their sole interaction.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And so the only one who's listening to her is the kid, and the only one who's listening to the kid is her. And so that relationship is really cool, the way that plays out. And that he gets the similar story to hers and manages to rewrite the ending, I thought was really cool.
Mm. Yeah, that was...
So given our to run down the plot of the middle of the movie, it's just insanity and constantly throwing interesting creatures in, and just when you think it's done, it's elves. But they're not elves.
Crazy shit that never would have occurred to you just keeps happening.
Yeah, they're crazy legend looking elves with ceramic masks that blink, and like, holy shit, it's great. So that's the middle of the movie. We get to the end where everybody's dead but the kid, and the kid comes face to face with Krampus.
And then we realize that Krampus is, ladies and gentlemen, drum roll please, a practical goddamn effect.
Yeah.
The crowd goes wild. Oh my god, that thing. Oh my god, that thing.
He's an actual thing. Yes. Yeah.
And throughout the movie, earlier on, when he goes ka-thunk on the ground near where the daughter is hiding under the car at the very towards the beginning of the movie, which you see in the trailers, like he has presence, isn't it, from then? And it's like, and then you get the full on face to face, and you're like, he is a thing. It's like, yes.
Now, what do you make of that face? Because I thought it was that here is a creature who's wearing a kind of horrifically twisted Santa Claus mask, and then you see his eyes and tongue behind it.
Yes.
Was that your take on it?
Yeah. Well, then actually, they showed a little documentary at the Draft House ahead of this, showing these dudes in various parts of Northern Europe who make these masks. And like they do them in multiple layers and stuff, and I don't understand I don't understand what they're saying, but you get the context that they make one mask and they put another mask on top of it, and so it's like that's as much as I could ascertain. I've not had time or energy to do any more research on that, but I would say that I think the way you said that is probably close to accurate.
But like in the context of the movie, because we had one person who watched it who said he was a little disappointed in the way that the monster looked because he wasn't expecting it to have a human face. And my take was, I don't imagine that he does have a human face. I thought that was a mask, like, in the movie.
Yeah, that's the way I took it. I thought it was sort of like a... He's like Santa, like the shadow of Santa thing. It's sort of like... It's like the Funhouse mirror version, where sort of like the real creature is not so much the person, or a person. And so that's the...
Yeah.
That's the cover over thing.
What was your take on that, Matt?
I think I had the same idea, that it's, you get, whatever it is something that is trying to look like Santa.
Yeah.
Right? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I will be a human Santa.
Right.
And like, you know what I mean? And so like, that's, again, like, that's why I wanted, like, because I didn't pay a lot of attention to it, weirdly, while watching the movie. Like, I just was kind of like, just... taking everything in. And so there are parts of this that, like, we were talking about after the movie over drinks. I'm like, I guess I didn't even really think about that. And like, now I want to watch it because I want to watch specifically to see how that scene played out or what that makeup looks like and really study how often you get to really see it. Like, there's a lot of things like that I just feel like I didn't grok fully. And yeah. I think that explanation makes sense to me. And that seemed to be kind of the consensus. Because yeah, like, you know, depending on what, you know, folk art you look at for Krampus, like, that is not necessarily what you'd expect to see. But the idea of something more sinister lurking behind a poor approximation of humanity, with the uncanny valley type thing not being truly approximating humanity, but you know what I mean? Like, that's creepy as fuck in its own way. You know, it becomes the Michael Myers mask, which is so very clearly meant to be human, but is so very clearly not a face. And that's pretty effective.
Well, and that's reflected, too, in the bells and in the cloak and in the chains. Because, like, if you think about Santa, at least the just picture the Coca-Cola Santa, if you will. And, like, they have the bells are all shiny and they, you know, ding, 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 ding. They're very nice. And his cloak's all very, very nice and clean and everything else. And the Krampus version is, like, really scuzzy and the bells have got a real Tom Waitsian sort of vibe.
Well, it looks like someone that actually goes up and down chimneys.
Yeah, it's very like it's sort of like down in the hole. You know, it's very like very dark and dirty, and it's like ah, it's neat.
Speaking of which, you can buy Krampus bells from Weta.
What?
Yep. Kirsten posted a link to the store page. They are currently on back order until March.
Holy shit.
But you can buy Krampus bells, which makes me super happy. I'll throw a link to that in the show notes this week because they are fucking great. It's exactly the one from the
back
movie.
Back order until March? Goddamn, jeez.
That's a beautiful kind of counterpart to the Polar Express bell.
Yeah.
As cool as that book is, you know, the movie, not so much. It's Steven Tyler shows up in your Christmas movie. Yeah. But, yeah, just having there be, like, well, here's the big dingy bronze bell that you can only hear if you've had the shit scared out of you by Krampus. So, here's an ending that your regularly scheduled Josh does not tend to appreciate. Which, so, what I love, though, kid comes up to Krampus and goes, "Hey, I take it back. I take it all back." Krampus kind of looks at him, laughs his ass off, and all the elves join him in laughing their asses off. And he says, "I'm sorry." And Krampus looks at him, picks him up, drops him in a fiery pit. Which is perfect, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he wakes up in bed and goes downstairs for Christmas morning. Everybody's back. Everything's fine. And it isn't until he unwraps the little Krampus bell that everybody goes, "Do you remember Howling Insanity last night? Oh, yeah, I do. Oh." And so it kind of ends on that, like, I guess we all better get our shit together vibe. And, you know, like, I'm not a fan of the take-back ending usually, but for a Christmas movie, I thought it was pretty perfect.
And they get seen elsewhere.
Well, I get the whole globe thing, I think, is the same as the ending of Men in Black, where they show the, like, universe and the marble, like, yeah, whatever. You know, that's a gag for the audience. It's not really part of the story.
Well, Kristen had a very what I thought was a very insightful take on that, which I hadn't thought about, and now it's my way I think about this ending, because thanks to Kristen, which is that, you know, he goes through that whole thing. It, well, going back to the fiery pit thing, which I love with a laugh. It's just so demented. So it's like almost Jim Henson like in a way. It had that kind of humor to it, I thought. But in any event, like he says. He's got, because they've got all the elves have got his cousin. He says, "No, take me instead. Take me instead." And they just go, "Whatever." Poof. Right. In the pit.
instead,
yeah,
as
yeah,
well.
As well. I don't, you're not making demands, kid. Like, so, you know, he does the thing of sacrifice. He's saying, "I'm sorry. I take it back," and the whole thing. And then, you know, they wake up, open the bell, and they all just go, "Wait a minute." And then you go back to the snow globe. So as of Thursday, Conan and I were like, "Oh, that's a downer ballsy ending." Like, wow, cool, interesting. And then like coming into taking Kristen, she'd taken it more of the idea that like it's like, all right, y'all motherfuckers are on notice now. Like, this is his little portal to keep an eye on your dumbasses, and if you act up, then you've been given your one warning. Like,
it is his crystal ball.
Yeah, and that's the way I take it. And now that is my ending. That's the ending that I want, which is that, like we've gone through this. Little boy was the one being tested. Little boy lost his faith. He sacrificed. He meant it sincerely at the end there. And then we said, okay, all right, well, then that's your chance. But do not forget that you know what can be taken from you at all times. Just ask your grandmother.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't take it as they were literally trapped in a snow globe for all time. I really thought it was more of just like, you're on dude's radar now.
Yeah.
He has a snow globe from everybody he's pulled this shit with.
See, my first impression walking out of the theater was just like, oh, cool, you get to live this reality forever.
Oh, so the idea that like they go through and then it happens, it keeps happening, or they're just...
Yep.
Oh,
like,
I didn't
even
think
about
that.
Now that he's claimed all of you, this is your hell. It's okay. Just like, you go, oh, it's fucking great. Wait, no, it's not. And then it starts again. And then once you're all dead in whatever manner, oh, it's all great. Wait, no, it's not. Just, you know, repeat ad nauseum. But, yeah, that was my first impression watching that.
I don't think that fits with the it seems like what he's going for. Because at the beginning you get the Christmas Carol thing.
Yeah.
He said you have Christmas Carol playing on TV. Mm-hmm. And then he said in interviews that the It's a Wonderful Life was another thing that influenced him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that whole, you get the entire nightmare and you don't skimp on it at all. And then once you've had your change of heart, then you get to have your life back.
But you got to retain retain those memories for it to count. I mean, that's the thing. Like, if it was just a little boy, if it was just him that had those memories, then I don't know that would have been kind of upsetting. But like the fact that they all just go, wait a minute,
Yeah.
Like, to me, that makes it so much better. So I kind of discounted
the whole little snow globe thing. It makes for a really cool visual.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
But I really thought, like, because he came out the other side of it, everything's, like, they've got the lesson, and that was the important part, and so now they're going to go try to be better and probably fail half the time. But, again, with these characters that kind of live and breathe outside of the context of the movie, you get the feeling that things are going to be a little bit better.
Yeah.
And that, like, that was enough. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I like that quite a bit. I was like, the other thing, just really, really fast, going back to Koechner, that scene of them in the living room when he's holding the baby, like, the look on his face and holding the baby, and they're like, okay, we got this plan, and he hands the baby off to his wife. Like, that was a little moment they didn't have to have. They didn't need to be there. But it was this lovely little moment as a flip of the coin to the, when he walks in, like, oh, this warhead's armed. The baby, you know, like having a full diaper or whatever. But it's like the flip of the coin to that where, like, you know, there's a humanity to it. Again, like one of those little things they don't need to have in there. They just did. And it's like, yes. Just sincerity. Just it's all there, you know. It's so cool.
When they have their lovely little moment where he has his little bonding moment with Adam Scott. He says, you know, I'm sorry for thinking you were kind of a pussy and a dick for years. And he's like, the what? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, well, I guess we'll take it. It's like, because the humor, the humor with the characters is not, it's not broad, it's sharp.
It's not sitcom humor at all.
No, not even a little bit.
It's actually based on human behavior.
Yeah, I would say, honestly, the things that, you know, the three of us say to each other and our friends in real life seem less plausible than the humor in this movie. You know what I mean? Like, the level of cockfuckery that happens among, like, a group of four of my friends is so over the top, you'd be like, okay, like, no one talks like this except that we do because we're all comedians.
Right, and because we were all raised on that shit, you know?
Yeah, and, like, but, like, in this movie, it's like, no, this is earned genuine laughs, not laughs playing to a canned studio laugh track.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? It's not the Big Bang Theory of funny.
And it's remarkable that he compared that with the crazy, imaginative, creative, and harrowing, creepy stuff.
Yep.
That drove me nuts, man. The review of this on the AV Club talked about, like, the jarring shift in tone between this. We start out with this family drama, and then suddenly we're in crazy Gremlins world, and...
But we knew that's where we were going.
Like, he can't really make those two things work together, try as he might, and, like, that's called character development and story.
You can do both of those, having a reason to care about the teenagers at the camp.
You should do both of those in every story.
Yeah, and maybe that's the problem, is maybe we're so used to movies not doing this right. But, yeah, this is a movie where you would almost expect to get whiplash from the sincere family moments and the quiet, funny, tender moments to the batshit insane, like the trip up to the attic. You know what I mean? Like, those things seem 180 degrees separate from each other, but it doesn't seem that way at all. Well, it doesn't feel that way when you watch it. It's, you know, on an academic level, I can see how you might go, those two things wouldn't make sense in the same movie, but watch the movie and they work perfectly.
Yeah, I was just saying, like, you know, like the Burbs or Gremlins as being great examples of that. I don't know, I mean, I hate to say it this way because there's been this change in our culture recently where, like, blame the media, blame the questioner, blame the, you know, whatever, which I don't think is accurate 90% of the time. But in this case, like,
let's just blame Josh.
Or Canada. But,
oh, yeah, that works.
On a basic level, it's sort of like, if you have made up your mind before you come to the theater, like, don't bother to see the movie. Like, no matter what it is, if it's a foreign movie, if it's a kid's movie, if it's a whatever. Because I read so many of those anymore. Like, it's hard to... It gets old. And you can hear
you're composing your review on the way to the theater.
Yeah, and I've overheard people, and people that I like, and people that I think are good writers, at times, have talked about that kind of stuff. Of like, well, I was thinking it was going to be this, and I thought this thing about, and I was like, it's like, man, that's not how you, you know. It's like, well, I'll make a sandwich. I'm going to put some ham in my socks, and I'm going to take the bread and throw it outside, and I'm going to pour some mayonnaise in my ear. Like, that's not how you eat a sandwich, man. Like, you assemble those things on a plate and then you eat it.
Oddly enough, you were disappointed because you didn't get what you wanted.
Yeah, it turned out to be the sandwich I wanted. Like, well, you're doing it wrong. This isn't going to be the right thing for some people, sure. But just, it's weird. I guess, put it this way. I think that, like, in a lot of ways, when something like this comes out, there will be a lot of the critic and the kind of the chattering class that will be like, well... You know, it's a cash-in thing, it's a holiday thing, it's a whatever thing. And that's going to be their mentality going into it, and some audience members too, for sure. And then they're never going to get past it, no matter what. Like, guaranteed. Same thing as a musical, or a crime drama, or a cop one, or whatever the hell it is. If those are the decisions you make going in, then you're never going to get past that. And that's same if you're 12, or if you're 80, or if you're a critic, or if you're whatever. I think it'll make a damn bit of difference.
Hey, since we're wrapping up on this one, I think now, and this is, you know, so we got Trick or Treat from this director, we got Krampus now. What's the next holiday movie? Easter. I'm assuming he's only ever going to make movies about holidays. So.
Got to be Easter.
I was hoping for Secretary's Day.
They'll just remake the movie Secretary with Maggie Gyllenhaal and James Spader.
Oh,
that movie's already pretty perfect. I don't know.
That is true.
Okay, well, that was
it. God damn it, Charlie. I've grown
to appreciate that. I've grown to appreciate that film over time, but not first.
All right, should we throw a number on this one then?
I thought we liked Secretary Charlie. You and I saw it together.
Uh-oh, here it comes.
Well, I mean, it's... I'm going to think of something different.
No, I was thinking more of Hedwig and the Angry Inch. Charlie and I saw it together.
Yeah.
And we were the only heterosexual same-sex couple in the room.
Josh is my wingman.
Like, should we make it obvious? He was like, should we make it obvious that we're not a couple? No, that would be shitty of us. What? Why am I worried about this? Ah!
It's like, we're gonna go outside and defame some minority and then shoot a duck. I'm like, all right, good.
All right, anyway, so wrapping on this, like, it is remarkable what he managed to pull off with just stacking the deck with this cast of very funny people, not making it have to be a straight horror comedy or straight horror or straight comedy, but just letting it unfold naturally the way that it needs to. And because of that, for me, a lot of the reviews of this just read like people saying this banana doesn't taste like an orange.
Yeah, for sure. Like, very well said.
For what it is, for what it seems, it really seems like he set out to do. He knocked it out of the fucking park, and he's 100. He's two for two, as far as I'm concerned. So
me too.
For me, this is 9 out of 10. 9 out of 10 jingling bells.
I'm right in that same ballpark. I think. Like I said, hearing there was a Krampus movie, I expected something more straightforward horror. I did not expect the movie we got, but I do think, and I think I said this when we were out having drinks after the movie, this will sit comfortably on the shelf next to Gremlins when it comes time to pull out holiday movies for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually quite a gift from a director, to have something that will kind of become one of those things that I will return to at least once a year. This one's pretty rad.
This one's certainly up there with like the rare exports and
rare exports. Yep, for sure. Like it's just this is real fun. And so I think I'll go 8.5 out of 10. 8.5 out of 10 noodle incidents. I'm going to reserve the right to perhaps adjust upward after I see the movie a second time.
Right on.
Oh, also, I recommend to listeners out there and the two of yous to listen to the music by itself. Because what you see in the film and then you listen to the music, you hear these so many. This guy, Pipes, I don't know the first name, I can't think of his name, but the guy who did the score, he incorporates all these little elements of Christmas carols in there and little bits of stuff, but it just goes further, and it's really neat. So it's really worth listening to music by itself. It's super cool. So this is fantastic. Got to take my lovely child on Thursday, and he was excited and scared and super happy to share it together. And we had such a ball. And then the two of us ganged up on the lovely Kristen, and we dragged her ass there, and she enjoyed it too. the one of the gifts of this movie, not only will we be able to watch this in years to come, along with things like Rare Exports and Ice Harvest, which is one of my other favorite Christmas movies, Die Hard, Gremlins, stuff like that. This will be right in there. Is that we walked out of there, we're talking about the movie and everything else, and we're talking about the different creatures and how great they were, and I was like, oh, that like weird angel demon thing. And then, like, they shoot it, and then it goes, blam, and the wreath, and isn't that cool? And then Kristen cuts me off. She's like, I knew you'd want one of those things. I knew it. I knew it. And it's like, and it's like that is a gift for Michael Dougherty to our little household here in Austin, Texas, is that little moment right there of, like, of everybody, all the three of us watching the movie and everybody else in the theater and walking out and like having that little shared funny thing happen, you know? So it's like, so thank you, Michael Dougherty, and thank you everybody for this movie. So I'm gonna say 9 out of 10, 9 out of 10 getting your ass kicked by a gingerbread cookie.
Nice.
Yeah, that was a much better version of Ginger Dead Man, I think.
Yes, yeah, or yep. There's no evil bongs whatsoever.
No, there was one benevolent bong. That showed up in the FaceTime with the boyfriend.
Yeah, that was sort of that's like true. The whole thing was you're kind right. of silly. It was like, oh, whatever.
Even he, though, he was not as shitty boyfriend character could be.
No, he struck me as relatively realistic.
He was equally as shitty as that kid would have been, you know?
Yep.
And too over the top. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with our other two bonkers movies. So feel free, Matt, to grab, you gotta keep your mouth limber, and loop that 8 or 9 times after this episode if you're so inclined.
You don't tell me what to do.
I don't tell you what to do. I suggest things that would be funny to do. If you're a guy who likes to do funny stuff, I don't know, maybe you do it.
So full of rage and bile.
I hate funny stuff.
No, god damn it. All right, fine.
No, you're the guy editing the thing. If you don't have to do anything, except edit excellent. The thing.
Oh, okay.
It's like perfect. That was my plan from the start.
Ding.
So our next movie up, speaking of things that were our plan from the start, is The Church or La Iglesia, or possibly Julio Iglesias.
Yes. No.
I always think of the like dudes with the Spanish names that sound all sexy. How sexy they would be if they had to use the actual English versions of their names. You know, like Antonio Banderas, like, oh, not a dry seat in the house. Tony Flags, not really hitting. Like, Julio Iglesias, oh yeah. Jules Churches, no.
Jules Churches just sort of sounds like a... Well, it just doesn't sound as interesting, say, yeah.
Right.
No.
Never one to let a gag jump when it could fall flat and
exactly.
die.
Exactly.
Are we here at Horror Show Hot Dog?
Right.
So we got The Church. It is also known as Demons 3. It's the third in the Demons trilogy,
but it's
I guess. From
not, though, because isn't Demons 3 the ogre Demons 3?
Well, there's a lot of consternation. That's what I was telling folks last week to like go check out some of the stuff with Argento and Savi and all of these guys. Like, there's a lot of to-do about in the background of this whole thing, from Demons to Demons 2, and like, you know, the guy who directed this one worked as kind of understudy for with Argento on a bunch of stuff, like Inferno and a bunch of other things, and he seemed to have his own ideas about stuff, but then two-thirds of the crew from this movie are like all Argento guys. So it's like this very weird dynamic of like, it's a sequel, it's not a sequel, it has to do with this thing, it has nothing to do with it. I'm like, huh, well, if Dario Argento is the guy polishing your script... You know,
but he's also the guy who's got the name who's going to sell the movie.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely. That's what it boils down to.
It kind of reminded me of a little bit of V for Vendetta. At least not like anything about the movie, but that whole, it's going to be a Wachowski brothers film, or I'm sorry, it's going to be a Wachowski siblings film, and they're not going to direct it, they're going to get their second unit director to direct it, but it's the Wachowski brothers present V for Vendetta by this guy.
Yeah.
So this really seems like Dario Argento's Demons 3 directed by this guy.
Yeah, pushed by Sapphire.
What?
Based on the novel, yeah, pushed exactly. by Sapphire. Absolutely. So this has, it definitely has all the earmarks of an Argento film where it's like minor considerations like coherence and plot and dialogue delivered in any kind of reasonable fashion get thrown out the window in favor of just bonkers visuals that are really fun to watch.
You have to calibrate for Argento.
Yeah, for sure. If you don't, you're going to be miserable.
Yeah.
Calibrate your monitor for Argento. Like, I was trying to just calibrate for magenta, but then I turned a knob
and suddenly there are
all these red washes in the background. And
it's after HDMI 2 is Argento. But no, that's the thing, because I forgot when I first started watching this, because at first I was like, my brain hurts, what am I doing? Hang on. Warm bath. Because that's how his movies work.
Yeah, you can't keep going, who the fuck are these guys? Okay, where'd that guy come from? My God, why do they sound like that?
Yeah, who would do this thing?
So, much like Suspiria, all of the dialogue in this is added in post. And I had accidentally watched, like, 5 or 6 minutes of the Italian dub of this, and it's very, very similar. So it just seems like they're shooting for an international audience.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to swap all the dialogue out, even for the English one, so we're just not going to bother recording it. Which works for some of the people, and then some of the people sound like bad anime dub.
The old cranky guy, the old...
I don't understand why... Oh, he's goddamn, he's
that
insane.
That one is amazing.
Yeah.
What? Like, where did they find that voice from? Like, what's happening with that guy?
He's the guy from, he's the cop, the, like, police commissioner from Alligator.
From Alligator?
Yeah, remember that movie Alligator we
oh,
watched?
Oh, Alligator.
2 weeks ago?
I thought you said Alligator. Like, he's the guy who sorts things out and distributes them in some kind of fashion planned on ahead of time.
Yep, Dwayne Johnson is the Alligator.
No, weirdly enough, Charlie and I had a stroke at the same time because I heard Alligator 2. No, not Alligator 2.
The whiffs of toast.
It made sense.
Blow across the plains.
Well, I bit my own tooth, which made that consonant come out weird, which should never happen to a human being. Like, fuck's sake, teeth, get your shit together.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I actually started taking notes this week, because I feel like I've said too frequently lately that I don't remember the movies, and I should start taking notes again, so I started doing that.
Right on.
And to prove that this is an Argento movie, sentence 3 of my notes involves how crazy this movie is.
Yeah.
Because sentence 1, which is, to be fair, a run-on sentence, is Teutonic Knight crushes witch's head with one hand, kills a bunch of witches, makes a mass grave, and then builds a church on it. This ought to end well. Really great reverse Raimi Evil Dead shot to tour the church for us. Dweeb's first day, runs into Chicky, monk guy looks grumpy, Dweeb meets girl under table, has the kind of interaction only Argento thinks is real. And that's the first, 20 minutes of this movie?
Yeah, I love that, like, we haven't exchanged names. Even. All we've established is you are a woman, I am a man. So, coffee? And by coffee, I mean I'm coming home with you tonight.
And also to, like, I'm a little angry that we haven't had coffee at my leisure.
Yeah, see, yeah that
when
thing,
I bump
later
into
on,
you
like,
later in
like,
the
by
day.
By the way, the fuck, coffee? Hello?
Yeah, he's like, I thought you said we were having coffee. And he's like, no, you said you wanted to have coffee to her. She was just like, okay, what? Also, this is a thing that, and again, it's Argento. Maybe he's never been in a real church. I don't know. But the scene early on where there's just like, they're having mass, fucking sat weirdly with me because they're having a mass, Deuter's giving the sermon, and everybody's standing, right? And then at an arbitrary point, everybody just sits down.
Yeah, in the middle of his little homily.
Yeah, and then a guy with a collection plate comes out and just starts asking people for money. And it's like, there's hand jive to go with those things if you're in church. Like, I've went to church enough years to know that, like, you have, like, you sit or kneel or stand during or before things based on the priest kind of indicating it's time to do that. Either you know you're going to rise for the whatever or sit for the whatever. and like, and now we'll pass the collection plate. Like, that was just like this weird, like, what are things people do in churches? Well, they, you know, they homily, they pass the collection plate, they stand up, sit down, fight, fight, fight. I don't know. Like, they just kind of did this weird pastiche of what church looks like, which made me go, like, I don't know that these people have really been to one of these. I don't know. It's odd. Oh, the other bit of dialogue that I loved, because I had to Google it, when, it's not long after this scene, they have kind of, douchey priest is asking for help with, like, a Latin prayer or something he can use for his homily the next week or something like that, and there's the kind of, like, younger, hipper black priest,
yeah,
and he asks him if he has an idea, and he goes, I'm diffident at Latin.
Yeah.
And I went, diffident. I feel like I have a vibe for what that means, but I guess I don't technically know exactly what that means. And I looked it up, and I'm like, that is not at all how someone uses that shit in a sentence.
Yeah, it's like they didn't know what it meant either.
Yeah, it's like you had a word of the day calendar, and it was diffident that morning. Like, what the fuck?
I thought that guy looked enough like, what's his name from Dusk Till Dawn, that I could just pretend it was either him or Richard Roundtree, and that just somewhere in a slightly... Huh. Other, you know, sideways from this, he's in his own, like, blaxploitation priest movie.
That would be so much cooler.
Where he's just like, father motherfucker, you know?
Not that this movie's bad, I mean, just cooler than what his character gets to do.
Yeah, he doesn't get to do a lot. He's an archer, which I thought was neat.
Yeah, archery. Him and Spock shop at the same hand accessory store.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by those. Well,
if you're doing archery, that makes sense. Because that's the thing that it protects your two fingers that you're using to pull the bow back, so you don't get, like, dents on your fingers.
And then it
extends up your wrist, so the bowstring doesn't snap your wrist.
But no, it doesn't, because that would be on the opposite hand, and he's not wearing one. I checked, because I thought it was weird.
Does he pull the... No, he pulls the string with the...
The hand that has the goofy little, like, fingering glove.
Yeah, but that's an archery glove for pulling, but you're right about the arm guard.
Yeah, but
should
he doesn't have
hand.
An arm guard on the other one.
Yeah, but like, the pulling thing should be on the pulling hand.
I guess.
No, that at least made a little bit of sense. As much as we can say it made sense. So we open this movie with a troop of German asshole knights who are going to go around and kill everybody because they have demon stigmata on them or something.
Do you guys know anything about Teutonic Knights?
I saw, like, the first Teutonic Knights. But the second one, I missed, I suppose.
Well, because I just assumed, like, oh, Knights Templar. Oh, wait, then later on they refer to them as Teutonic Knights, and I was like, oh, I guess the Knights Templar are the ones I always hear about. I don't know shit about a Teutonic Knight. I don't know if that's a thing or not.
I want my brain to stop coming up with the lyrics for Isn't It Teutonic, Don't You Think? But it won't. I won't share them with you. That's the only gift that I can give you. It is a grace I do not allow myself.
Fair enough.
So here's the thing. You open with this, like, horrific slaughter of all these people who the knights believe to be possessed by demons.
Which
they're
you keep
wrong.
Expecting to stop, and it just keeps
movie,
going. Not in a draggy way, but you're like, oh, they're not going to show that.
Yeah. Yeah, surely this horrible apocalypse that they are delivering unto this village will stop short of this atrocity. Oh. Well, surely it will stop short of that next Oh. Well, clearly
no.
They won't even... Oh.
But that is the crazy thing with a movie like this, where you get midway through, they're like, oh yes, the Teutonic Knights, their horrors they committed in the name of God are legendary. And then they were right.
Yeah,
those people were possessed with
the
demons. That's like hearing the Spanish Inquisition turns out all the, you know, or the Salem witch trials. Like, turns out they all were totally witches. So thank God there were Salem witch trials. Like,
it is
a real mindfuck.
It is a really disturbing way to have to, like, watch the end of this movie going, oh my God, everything they did was worthwhile. So you get that, and that gives us where the church is built. And then you get, I just called him Dweeb. The guy that comes in to look at the books.
Yep.
Because he's just a total Poindexter. Before he gets super rapey.
Yeah, man, he takes a turn, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. And I was just like, you know. So at some point, though, like he comes into the thing, and we talked a little bit about the other stuff that happens. And so he's studying all these different books, and they find like a parchment or whatever, and he's all like, Dweeb thinks the parchment can, like, make somebody into a god, but also bitches he doesn't want to spend the rest of his life looking at old books. But, I mean, if they're hiring
to spend the first half of his life looking at
old books.
But
that's what I'm saying. Like, if they hired from this job, I'm pretty sure he got a degree in old book looking. So, like, maybe don't get a degree in old book looking, asshole. Like, you know, and then, which, the fact that he doesn't want to look at old books forever, but then he gets to Bone Town and then has this, like, cortis interruptus for science because he's, like, looking at a reflection in a teapot or something.
Yeah, I love that part. She just sets up, like,
he figures out,
like, she just
reads a book.
All right, well, I want to read this thing.
It's like, were you actively inside me for, like, a fraction of a second there before you decided to go all M.C. Escher over there?
Yeah, he's like, well, let's see, that's about 6 pumps. I gotta make this seem like it lasts 20 minutes. I'm gonna go over here and do some Sudoku, and then...
It's a really extreme version of thinking about baseball.
This is the way Dan Brown writes novels.
So, I love, by the way, that she goes Shades of Indiana Jones.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Mm. It's like, holy shit. This is a movie set in a universe in which the Indiana Jones movies exist, and yet we're referencing them at the same time. Fun.
So
like, fast forwarding slightly, if you want.
Which actually, yeah. It's just funny you say that, Josh, because in my notes they're like, well, then a whole bunch of whatever happens for a while.
It's like, yeah, we get our little nod to, is it Asia? Aja? Yeah. Aja Argento is the young girl in this?
Yep.
Which, again, like... it's that Steven Tyler thing of using your young daughter as a sex symbol in your music video, or in this case, movie, which is just creepy. So, like, we cut to her sneaking back into the church to go home, because apparently they live in the church, because her dad, I don't know, is like a caretaker or something,
Well, he makes
right?
his living as a caretaker, and also he does an impersonation of the guy who plays the principal in Ferris Bueller's Day Off as well.
Yeah, that's true. So, like, she comes sneaking in home and then, like, opens the door, and dad just gives her 5 across the eyes the second the door opens. And you're like, holy shit. Like, and mom's like, when you're done slapping our daughter, if you could come back to bed, that'd be super.
The mom character is one of the strangest characters ever. Every single time, she said, well, don't forget the peas. Like, what?
Yeah, because he's, like, whooping the fuck out of their child, and she's like, would you hurry up? Because I got peaches that need canning or something. And you're like, dude, the fuck? We end up with some invisible clip-clopping from horses inside the church. We have a diffident Latin archer.
Well, doesn't Glasses Johnson, doesn't he get cut? That's what starts his sort of thing, where he does that thing where, like, his hands are all, like, ucky, and then he's, like, he's going to, like, strangle him. He's strangling himself and takes out his heart and all that stuff?
Yes, because he finds the stone with 8 eyes in the basement, which is what he learned from the parchment, which is some kind of manhole cover because movie. But then it turns into a big light up cross hole, and then Dweeb gets choked by the corpse of the mind.
Well, that's the thing. The only reason I bring that up is, like, the music in that sequence is amazing. It's just like
it truly
it's just
is,
like
yes.
It's you could just hear, like, Philip Glass and Claudio and there was guys, like, just hanging out, just like we're gonna throw it all in there, mix it all up, and we're just doing it. This is what we're doing. And you're like, you hear that goblin sound, and you hear that, it's like oh my god.
Goblin didn't do all the music, right?
Philip,
because there are, like, 2 things that I'm like, yes, and then the rest of it I'm like, oh, this is not.
No, there's parts of it. There's parts of it that are Philip Glass by himself, and there's him working with a couple guys from Goblin. And there's a couple parts that are goblin, you know, and then...
Like, okay. And then, once again, this is one of those movies where they get miscredited as Goblins or The Goblins.
Which is very silly.
Which is like, this is your prime musical collaborator. You can't get their goddamn name right? Dude. So anyway, Chicky has a weird dream.
I really like, by the way, though, that they've established we're going to see shit and then kind of flashback to what's actually happening.
Yes.
I love the cross falling and just falling for, you know, 80 feet. And then he reaches down, like, suddenly the cross is back, and he just reaches into the hole and grabs the bag, opens it up, demon arms come out, and then there were no demon arms. It's all good.
It's the corpse of the mind.
That one made me jump. Whoa.
Yeah.
So, but then he gets all rapey and goes to assault Chicky, pulls out his own heart, and, she does a really good dive out of a window.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually pretty impressive.
Fairly unmotivated, but a really good dive.
Yeah, and then, but it's like she, like, dives out the window, and the cops are already there, and she's like, there's someone in my house trying to kill me. They're like, yeah, whatever, baby, get in the car. And it's like, you really? Okay, again, Argento. And then Dweeb is now cranked up the creepiness to, like, a crazy level the next day, where both, like, Chicky that he was macking on earlier, and, again, Aja Argento, who is, like, 12. Ugh. Mm-hmm. Like, creeping intensifies. More casual child abuse, and you get, like, dad washing out Aja's mouth with really gross soap.
Oh, well, we also get some introductions.
Soap is just not the same everywhere.
This is another thing, though. This movie is just bonkers beyond all reason. We get introduced to some more characters. We get the two motorcyclists that are, like, arguing in this weird situation. And you get also outside, you get this, like, newly married couple who, initially, I didn't think they were getting married. I thought it was, like, a photo shoot for, like, a wedding magazine. And they we get those guys introduced briefly. And it's like, and then the black priest fellow shows back up again. And then it's like, and you get the dad guy who wants to kill and destroy. And it's like, and he's scratching people, and then, like, the door closes, and it's like, and then we have the last half hour of this movie, which is just, like, woo-hoo!
Just bonkers. And this, my notes kind of trail off, because at this point, there's just nothing to say. Like, I think I've got, let's see, autoerotic jackhammering, general nonsense amongst everyone while the church door seals, catfish demon of the mind bites groom.
Out of the holy water.
That was
good,
pretty great.
God almighty.
So good. Myopic teacher gets gated in the throat, ringing bell with head, goat-headed
cool
demon bone town.
How cool, by the way, was that switch? Because you have the bride has stuck on the door by her veil.
Yes.
For approximately 3 hours.
At least, because remember, they go in daylight.
Yeah, oh no, I was thinking just the subjective time of the movie.
Sure.
She's stuck on that door a long-ass time.
Well, no, but that's the
and
thing.
And when
like
the spikes come at her, it's just in time for her to pull away and this other chick to get in there.
Yeah, but that's like part of the whole like Argento-ness of it, is like the door slams shut and clamps her veil and dress into the door. And it's, you know, daylight at least, mid-afternoon, let's say, when they come in to get their photos. Then it's like midnight around the time that all the shit goes sideways. So for 6 hours, she's been trapped next to that door in her dress. Not a single person outside the church has thought to go, huh, odd. Doors are shut and there's a dress trapped in it. All those kids that are on a school field trip, no one's thought to go, wonder why none of our kids came home from school today.
Right.
Like, you know, like, again, it's Argento. It doesn't matter. What matters is you have this fodder. And he will do crazy bullshit with them that you will cheer for because it is so fucking crazy. The big Antichrist tree knob that comes out of the floor is astounding. Like, there's so much cool shit. The old couple up in the belfry where literally the old woman starts ringing the bell with her dead husband's head.
Yep.
Fucking
well,
awesome.
Well, earlier, all her dialogue, too, she's like, she says something like, it's still Disney being far out and being, she says, have a biscuit, they're groovy.
So good.
I had to pause it, like, wait, they're groovy?
So good.
Like, yes. What?
Because they are. Oh, I love it. And
both
then again,
the biker's girlfriend getting hugged by the snake, you know, demon guy, and then just getting destroyed by a train.
Yeah.
That was one of those, like, that had nothing to do with anything. That didn't have anything to do with the demons. That was just like, hey, I wonder, like, I think we've, like, tunneled into a cave. It's like, oops, I fell in. Like, oh, shit, it's a subway tunnel.
The crazy goat head demon that bones down in the basement now that they've kind of got enough weird people possessed to do the thing.
McConaughey goats getting alone.
Sure, but by the way, that would have been a better version of that goddamn VHS 2 segment if that had been the demon. Cause
I was just thinking of what was the... Cool. What was our Peter Cushing movie with the goat god who's just kind of hanging out?
McConaughey goat? That's from Devil Rides
Out. Devil Rides Out. Devil Rides Out. Yep. I was just like, oh my god, it's him again. When will they figure out that making a very literal ghost face or goat face just makes it look really, really funny? There's a reason why when that dude from Wu-Tang started out, they were like, dude, goat face killer doesn't really have a ring to it. What about, like, ghost face killer? Like,
ooh.
Oh, that's tight, man. Yeah, and goat face killer. What was I thinking?
I was thinking I like to eat some cans.
Yeah.
The original and the original song was "Protect Your Elbow," and they're like, "Yeah, that just that doesn't even rhyme."
So dumb.
Yep. Anyway, but yeah, so there's not much to say about the last 25 minutes of this movie aside from it's fantastic. It's just it's so bonkers and doesn't matter. You just need to see it and go.
Well, and the thing with the bride, like she looks in the mirror, she has the thing where she looks old, she claws her face off.
Yeah. And then
we have like oh yeah, and then Kristen put this out because she's working in the room but not paying attention. It was like they go down and all of a sudden we've got our curator lady like naked on the slab, and like all every cast member it's that scene in The Wizard of Oz essentially where like they all come around the bed, you know, like well you were here the whole time, you know, like okay.
Well, first she does her like her little naked walk through the church, where the camera is playing with, you know, here's a calf, here's a shoulder, and in my head I'm going, been around the world tonight, I can't find my baby. Anyway,
was it what is that lady?
It was very very music video-y.
What is that woman's name? That you just did the song.
Oh, you know, not important.
But
Enya.
Enya. Anyway,
Lisa Stansfield.
Thank you, Christ on a cracker. Okay. Oh yeah, so they all come around the thing, and then they all start chanting and stuff, and she's laying there, and whatever, and then it's like the glasses guy started to look like Julian Sands all of a sudden, and then it's like, I don't understand what's going on, but then they're doing this like, just chanting in the thing, chanting in the words, and then they keep saying salsa. I was like, why do they talk about salsa? I was just like, what the hell? What is happening?
And then one of them just goes, New York City.
Get a rope or a demon or
I love
a snake or a...
That's really unusual, though, for
defense,
the chanting. Like, usually you would start your... All right. Usually you would start your chanting really quietly and then they would build to a crescendo. They just keep whispering and it's actually kind of creepy. Wrecked, though, by cutting back to the goat guy and his O-face.
It's like... And that goes into, then you get the writhing pile of muddy, the people coming up from thing.
Oh, because you have Clockwork Church.
Yeah.
That was built by the alchemist to seal itself off.
Yep.
And they pull out, you get your, like, flashback to the alchemist. They're like, yes, you built the Clockwork Church, but that means you are a devil worshiper. So we're going to pull out the exploding pear thing and we're going to stick it in your mouth, and he's like, no! He's like, actually, of the places that those things were stuck, mouth is probably your best option.
I mean, none of them are great.
No, I mean, it's definitely just choosing different scents of farts there, but yeah, as far as orifices go. So, we find the secret to stopping the demons is hidden in the architect's mouth, and then we get to, like, he pulls the thing and takes out the structural whatever, and the whole church falls apart, and the end. Or is it?
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. So, what can we say? It's crazy and nonsensical and deeply silly with the dialogue, what is said and how it is said, but goddamn did I enjoy it.
It is a little slow for the first 30, 40 minutes. You find out who your players are, but you have to accept that they are just not going to make a lot of sense. But the level of payoff you get is so over the top that it's totally worth it. So just like if you kind of lock in going, all right, I'm just going to like give this movie time to get where it's going. And then once it does, you're like, yes, this is totally worth it. It's like Society, kind of. Like it just goes bonkers. And
I was really
impressed
with the tower of mud-covered naked people. Like, that is a hell of a thing
tree
to actually build, and, yeah. The X-Fest tree, did you say?
No, the Antichrist tree.
Oh, because I was just thinking, like, people in the mud at X-Fest or Woodstock
or
whatever.
Just thinking of Willem Dafoe in that one movie. So.
Okay. Fair enough. What do you got for ratings, gents? Matt, what do you got for ratings?
The
I said gents, but, yeah, go for it.
I can't believe how often I make that stupid fucking sound in this show. I love the shit out of this. I often feel like I like Argento more intellectually than I do experientially. If that makes sense. Like, I dig people doing bonkers shit, but sometimes his movies are just so just blah. But like, this, fuck, this is good. This is so much fun. Like, you know, you'll be cheering by the end if you're like me, and that's delightful. So yeah, I was super excited to watch this, because once I was made aware of it, I was like, I got to try to get that into something we have to watch for the show as quickly as possible, and it turned out that was relatively quickly. So that was great. I would recommend this to anybody. This would be a good, I think, intro to Argento, because it kind of lets you know exactly what it is he's about, I think. Nonsensical, weirdly dubbed, and then nothing matters for the first 40 minutes, because it's just getting people in a room for bonkers shit to happen at the end. So, I'm going to say a 7.5 out of 10 what's the term they use for the fact that there's only one door in the church?
Monodoral.
There you go, monodoral churches.
I don't know. I enjoyed watching it. I had the glee. I don't know if it's as polished as it could possibly be, for sure. But it's one of those where you just have to go, sure, it's got all this weird shit going on, but it's so worth it. Stick with it. Even when, like, why are they talking so fast? They're talking like they're dubbing anime, but they don't have to, like, match a bunch of mouth flaps by speeding up, like, the dialogue and adding more words. So what's going on? Like, I think the old man might have actually been talking in Japanese, because he's the one that, for the most, like, I don't understand why we have to do any of these things that we are doing. Like, what? Okay, well, to make it fit, sure.
His power level is nearly 9,000.
But I did enjoy it greatly, and I would give it maybe a 6.5 out of 10 Matthew McConaughey goat O-face.
Yeah, I don't know. I really like this. I would probably say starting people off on Suspiria would be a better choice, but you know, who knows?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's so weird and so creative, and like the scale, the imagination of these dudes. That's another thing. It's like, God sakes, like nothing will be done small. Like everything will be huge. Mm-hmm. So no, I thought it was really neat. I really enjoyed it. I didn't get the drag butt that sometimes happens, so I really enjoyed that too. Love the music, love the weird touches of all that stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's just yeah. So I would say probably 7.5 out of 10. This is a dumb joke, but it was the joke that popped in my head. It was like when the priest goes wee on the spire down below. I was like, it's one of those things where, like in offices where they used to put the while you were out things and they put the messages. I was like while your priest was out, you know. So that made me laugh, and I was like, all right, good. Well, that's what I want to do. So that's what I say.
This is the church, and this is the steeple.
While your priest was out. Dun, dun, dun.
All right, let's roll right into the Devil's Rock. Roll into the Devil's Rock. Thanks, brain. Final movie of the week is The Devil's Rock, or La Piedra del Diablo.
Holy crap, was this a good movie?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll put that right out there. It's
this is
New
great.
Zealand, you've once again impressed us.
God damn it. No, I just want to talk. So the quick gist of this is you get a couple soldiers on like a sabotage mission the night before D-Day, right? And they end up on the wrong island because they're...
Yeah, like the current took them and they went like a beach or two too far down.
Right? And so like the idea is that like if I got all this correctly, the text or narration or whatever tells you that like, okay, so D-Day is going to happen on Normandy. So they had people do these other kind of things farther away from that, trying to draw German attention somewhere else. These guys are part of that group, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so they go to whatever little island to blow up some little installation to make people think that like that's where the attack is coming or something. And so they end up at the wrong one, not that big a deal. And they show up to like destroy some kind of gun installation or something, and hear weird-ass screaming and kind of, like, torture-y sounds. And between the two of them, then they have to decide, like, do we just do our mission and get the fuck out of here, or do we go investigate? And of course, because, you know, we need to have a movie that's longer than 20 minutes long, they go investigate, and shit is not what they expected, I guess.
Or what we expected, really.
No, I honestly didn't know anything about this, so this is a treat from start to finish.
And so what we got is Nazis, like they do, have been trying to summon some supernatural stuff to help them win the war. I always love when a movie will go for that. You know, like the first Hellboy kind of did, sure. And yeah. They alluded to that in Constantine, too. So this time they actually managed to summon a demon, which takes on the form of whatever girl is the love of your life. If you're a dude, and presumably...
Which, to be fair, as demons go, that's pretty brutal.
Yeah. And then as soon as you get close enough, just disembowels and crazy towns. So we got Guy wants to go help. His buddy decides to hang back and eventually comes and follows him. I was really surprised that the buddy gets shot fairly early on.
Yeah, and he's eliminated very quickly.
So instead of being like the guy, his friend, the Nazi, the demon, and the pizza place, they've just got... You have to, you know. So all you've really got for cast then is your New Zealand guy, the Nazi, and the demon. And yeah. It turns into this kind of tense little, like,
well, you get like
parlor
a weird,
play, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, you get a 12 Angry Men type thing, like, of people trying to gain the upper hand, and then dealing with the idea of, like, who to believe and what to believe and how to deal with the ramifications of what they decide to believe.
Right.
So, yeah, once Buddy dies in a room full of just gore, just fucked up dead bodies everywhere, the dude with the rifle rammed down his throat is especially awesome.
Who that is, the guy with the rifle down his throat is the director of Black mm-hmm. Sheep.
Really?
Yeah, because this is all the effects, by the way, ladies and jelly spoons, is Weta, or Weta Workshop, I pronounce it like New Zealanders, Weta Workshop. And these guys have done all Weta. The movies, like all of them. It's just mm-hmm. like anything that was filmed, I mean, this goes back to Peter Jackson at the very beginning, but it's like they have just done every goddamn thing that's come close to their shores. It's remarkable.
Well,
and
yeah, why
wouldn't
their
scale and their range is big. It's amazing. their filmography is something special. It's really cool.
So we get our guy, who is captured by German guy, or as I just referred to him, Fritz.
Yeah, or as I put my notes, he's awfully English for a German guy.
He is, yeah. That's the one thing you just gotta
give
him.
I'm just gonna let it go. I was like, whatever.
So you get our guy, Fritz, and then in some other room, the demon. And so you get this, like, you know, where's the money, Lebowski scene. And then you get this, like, loud moan, and some more interrogation, and then a really loud thing, and he looks a little, like, Fritz looks a little freaked out, and just goes and, like, makes a chum bucket, and says it's hungry, and leaves.
Yeah.
And you're like, cool, I really want to see what's in that room now. And then, you know, when they return, there's some more, like, weird conversation / interrogation.
Which is super, super interesting, too. Like, I have not had enough time to go and research besides just about the hour to couple hours I spent bumping around looking at some of the stuff. A lot of the stuff that they talk about in this is like, oh, man, I want to learn. I wish I had more time to learn because I want to learn. It's really interesting. The German stuff with New Zealand and Australia and all that kind of stuff. Like, oh, man, it's a bunch of shit I didn't know before. I gotta learn more of this stuff, but I need to find more time.
Yeah, they really get into the idea of why New Zealand entered the war in the first place.
Yeah.
And this guy's background is like a poor farmer who's just like, you know, I don't like bullies. And you actually get a version of the we're not so different, you and I speech that almost plays, where the guy's like, look, the people here are just as hungry and just as suffering as the people that you're in your hometown that you want to protect, and we're protecting them. It's like, you have a point, except you're a fucking Nazi, right? But he does, like, it resonates a little more than it has to, I think.
So yeah, it was really very cool. Interesting. that whole thing.
And so, then you get the demon is played by... We only see the demon in the form of the guy's, New Zealand guy's deceased wife.
Yes.
And she is a phenomenal actress.
Mm-hmm.
So she has her, like, her sexy lady form and then her demon form.
I like demon form.
Oddly still sexy, but, you know.
I wouldn't say oddly, I'd say intentionally.
It reminded me of the whatever artist that is who does, like, skater stickers and punk posters and shit.
Yeah,
he has the red skinned.
Well, like the Big Daddy Rock kind of thing, or no? No, that's more.
Not that, Big Daddy Rock. No.
Who's the? There's some band that has those in other album covers.
Oh, like Nashville.
Yeah, but he, you know,
there you
Nashville
go.
Pussy. Yep, there you go. Okay, so yeah, she looks like a Nashville Pussy demon.
A little bit like a Lords of Acid
there
album cover.
Yeah,
Yeah.
There you go.
But really beautiful, got her old. Really beautiful practical makeup.
Yeah, but it's also
an amazing,
like,
performance.
Relatively simple. Like, you essentially just have a woman with red skin and kind of some horns. And, like, that's just kind of enough. They don't go super bonkers with it, and I think that's all. But they don't need to. That's fine, you know?
They do some cool shit with the contact lenses early on before they give her final form.
Yeah, she has David Bowie eyes.
She gets, like, one eye blown out to like, three-quarter demon.
Mm-hmm.
And then that eye goes full demon, and then you get both eyes full demon. But there are several stages of it. It's really subtle.
Yeah, it changes throughout. But, like, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just one of those things where it's like, you're off. Yeah. So, eventually, like, between our guy and Fritz changing who is in the position of power, they kind of decide, okay, the idea is we have this demon that we've summoned. It can't cross running water, so it's trapped on the island. But it will fuck shit up, so we should probably banish it. And our guy doesn't quite trust Fritz, so he has the pouch of great importance.
the pouch that has a... Yeah, he does. The pouch that protects Fritz because it has a page of the book in it that prevents the demon from harming him.
Yeah.
And so he steals... The New Zealand guy steals that.
He swaps it out with just a random page while Fritz is knocked out or something.
Yeah.
And so they go create, like, this... And they do some really cool little stuff with, like, rituals
it's
and things. Like, drawing the little mark.
Okay, we gotta draw this circle. Put this thing over this way. We gotta do the deal.
You know?
It's very important. And you're gonna fuck off, you.
And trying to keep the demon trapped in her original room. And, like, there's no lock on the door, so he just draws this goofy symbol. And then you watch the door strain, but be unable to open. Like, I love that shit. Like, that's really cool. And then, Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think that I've seen a movie yet where they draw a circle and then they have to not leave the circle that wasn't pretty damn cool. Like, at least that part of any movie, that's just a really neat thing to do to your characters.
Yeah, I always think that's cool because you have to wonder, like, okay, what's going to happen? And in this one, when Fritz dies, the idea that she's like, oh, and you left me this handy little bridge to walk into your circle with because she can walk across this blood that runs across the circle. Like, that's fucking cool.
Yeah.
Like, that's really fucking cool. And turns out, you know, our guy was right because Fritz is going to backstab him during the ritual instead of banishing
her. Yeah, it's so disappointing.
Yeah, like, literally.
I know. I kind of really like that they were working together. But, okay, that means that our guy gets his thing to, you know, he has his protection pouch and whatnot. And they kind of do, like, this weird exorcism-like thing. You get the double cross. And holy shit, that demon swallows Fritz's head whole.
Yeah.
That was awesome. That is so
And there's
so
some
awesome.
Really neat, simple, and could have been awful because it was obviously done on the cheap. But just...
Well, it could have looked like that Aphex Twin video.
Yeah, but then, like, the demon's neck is really thick in a way that you almost don't notice until it goes back to normal.
Yep.
You're like, oh, wow, I didn't realize the demon was that, like, bulked out. And then just, like, shoop. Oh.
Yep.
So cool.
Yeah. I really dug that.
The thing of, like,
and so...
Because she's trying to manipulate him and being all, like, kind of sexy, yeah, I can be like this or this other thing and this whatever. And then it's like... And then it's like, oh, by the way, and then it just goes nom, and then eats the guy's head. And I just wrote my notes around, less turned on now. It's like cooler heads have been prevailed. And I was like, okay.
And so then our ostensibly then just our end of this, because our guy can't banish the demon. He doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. He goes, well, all right, this thing's trapped here. So if I just kind of leave it, the Nazis that periodically show up will just get eaten by it. And good enough. And so he leaves.
He kind of says, like, I'm going to come back with somebody later after you've torn through a bunch of Nazis, and then I'll take you out.
Yeah.
I don't know if we believe him. I don't know if that matters.
Yeah, and post-credits, we do see a Nazi get eaten by her.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, all right, that works on some level. You know, it's just like, I guess you just tell, like, all the allies, like, don't go on this island. Don't worry. It'll take care of itself.
Yeah.
And then once the war is over, you get a bunch of people to translate that book and then go back and fix it or whatever.
Also, was there anything with what they called her, the Femme Varoux or Femme Varouk or whatever they called her? Is that a thing? Is that a demon? What is that?
I guess I didn't know how it was spelled.
Yeah, they really kind of mushmouth that a little bit. They call her.
Yeah.
Okay.
Klaatu Barada Nisi.
Necktie. That was another thing I made a note to myself, like, go back and learn more. Because, like, this movie gave you a lot of opportunities to learn shit.
Yeah.
It is just, like, it's a lovely little jewel box of a movie. Where they've got very minimal sets, very minimal cast, very minimal effects, and just managed to get this incredibly intriguing setup that you're just, and that kind of a simple setup, but you're just kind of, I was on the edge of my seat watching it play out, and the interactions between New Zealander and the demon are just fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it never makes a wrong step the whole way through. It's super neat. Do we have anything else to say about it, or do we want to wrap it up?
I feel like I don't want people to think we're not excited about this movie and didn't love it, because we're not taking a ton of time on it, but because it is really good. I think it's just a simple thing of, like, just go watch it. Like, you just need to see it unfold. Yeah. You know?
It's a really quick watch.
Yeah, this flew by.
I could see this almost like a stage play, in a way.
Oh, man, that'd be cool.
I could see this in that kind of way, because it's not... The scale of it, the only time we ever get scale on that island is at the beginning when our guys are coming in there and they're going across the beach and all that kind of jazz and, like, having that kind of funny conversation and whatever. But, like, outside of that, there's not a lot of scale to it. Like, once they've arrived at the thing, and that's where we are, you know, and you at that point we're only dealing with two rooms, really. And then a whole bunch of long tubular hallways. A couple of times, I kind of got a little bit of the shudders, and like, it's like, you can't see down there, but someone's looking back at you. Yeah. I like that. Overall, very cool. The only thing I would say is, like, I think the demon was okay. I wasn't as big of a fan of the design. But, I mean, I don't think it was bad by any stretch. I just, like, I like things to be scuzzier looking. And she had a little bit too much of, like, a car show look about her, I guess. And so I wanted her to be a little scuzzier looking. But besides that, I thought it was fine. And that young lady is very good. Which, I just read this thing online about her, whatever her name is, Gina Varela, who, she hasn't really done much acting since this one. Because she's been behind the camera doing directing. Because I guess her parents... started some kind of independent documentary company, and she's like working in Greece, like working behind the camera and producing stuff. Like, no, dude, no, you need to perform more because you're good.
Yeah, like, cool, do that too. Yeah, but you're really good. Like,
damn it.
Yeah.
You didn't check with us first.
Nobody ever does. Jeez, why don't they ask?
Why don't they look?
why don't you put a number on it, Charlie?
I'm going to say. I'm going to say. I'm gonna say seven. Now I'll go a little higher. I'm gonna say 7 out of 10. I'll say 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10. Femme Varuka mumble bingidingadoo.
Excellent.
Good thing we don't make Matt write those down.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Trust me, there was a point when I was doing the ratings page going, nope. Because I decided I didn't want to do that every week. I'm going to say like a 7.5. 7.5 deep-throated rifles. This was just another one that was just a really unexpectedly good movie, which, like, as you mentioned, Josh, like, goddamn, New Zealand and Australia are just killing it for horror. Like, mm-hmm. They do so much fun stuff. Like, you know, I think we've watched a couple that were, like, Patrick didn't really float my boat, but, like, in general, like, they're at least they're doing something interesting each time, even if it's not quite my thing. Like, I don't know. Maybe they're far enough from Hollywood that they don't get stuck just trying to ape what everybody else is doing. Maybe that's it. I don't know.
Look at Wormwood as a good example of that.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing. So maybe it's just that, like, I'm excited to see what comes out of there whenever we pick one of those movies, because the odds of it being something that I won't be able to predict in the first 10 minutes are pretty fucking good. So, yeah, totally worth a watch. It's great.
Yeah, I would say, just to piss Matt off, that it's 7.75 magical pouches of protection. She's like, hey, baby, you want to see my magical pouch of protection?
Nope.
Although he does do it. Okay, well, one little thing about the pouch, though, just real fast. He does the thing, like, he takes off the pouch. I'm going to pull it off the guy and look at the pouch. And the pouch is, like, sealed closed with a knot. And it has some wire that is sealing it behind that. It's like, it's got the same...
Yeah, it's like a bread tie.
It's got the same problem as, like, the guy from Evil Dead. Like, the book is bound in barbed wire, and it says, don't fucking open this. I don't know if I should open that, though. I want to check that out.
Right.
No. Like, all signs...
So what you're saying is open it?
Silly bugger. Outside, there's a small quibble, yeah, whatever. But it's just like, when I saw the whole thing wrapped around the top of it, like, it's like, that's how the world says no. Don't go in there. Like, okay. But overall, yeah, very cool.
Yeah. Good stuff. All right, we will take a quick break, and we'll be back with our holiday-themed films for next week.
Yay!
So next week we're going to get into the Christmas spirit, kind of. We discovered in looking for Christmas movies to do that we have done almost all of them.
Well, all the ones we want to do.
Yeah, almost all of them that are any good. Like, all the top 20 lists of movies always have, like, Rare Exports, Silent Night, Deadly Night, Black
Saint,
Christmas.
Yeah,
like, so we've watched many of the good ones, which leaves us with films like these. We're going to do Elves. It's from 1989 and stars Dan Haggerty.
Oh, fuck yeah, it does. Fuck
else keep an eye out, kids. If you want to do a drinking home game, do a drinking home game of when the elves will do a stabbing of somebody in the mouth or the face or the body, and then you have to take a drink. Do that for me, will you?
Ooh, I'm yeah, right? I'm game for that. All right.
That is available in its entirety on YouTube and almost nowhere else.
I'll post that in the show notes.
Yep, and our second film is Lucky Stiff, written by one of the writers of Brain Donors, Naked Gun, and Airplane, and directed by Anthony Perkins of Psycho fame.
If that
and
didn't make your head fucking melt.
That's going to be fantastic, we're sure, and that is also streaming in its entirety on YouTube.
Oh my god.
And for our third film, we're going to do Silent Night, Bloody Night, starring John Carradine. That is available on Amazon, free with Prime. And probably other
it's
locations.
It's like $2 otherwise on
less,
Amazon.
Yeah, less savory locations around the internet. Our short is fucking finally Bad Guy Number 2, which we loved, was a huge hit at the Twin Cities Horror Fest.
And as of today, when we're recording on the 8th of December, this is the first day it's been publicly available online. So
yeah, we have been dying to cover this, so we hope that you all will enjoy it as much as everybody else has. And if you don't, then just realize that it's you who is the problem.
Right. Clean this shit up.
Are there any? Yeah. Are there any other events or anything that we need to plug for this week, Matt?
Horror related, not really. If you are so inclined and would like to come see me do a thing, you can come see the show I'm in at the Phoenix Theater called "Get Thee Behind Me, Santa," which the next appearance of which will be this Friday at 7:30. We also have Saturday at 10, next Wednesday the 16th at 7:30, and finally Sunday the 20th at 7:30. Which is a farcical spoken word play done by the incomparable Philip Andrew Bennett Lowe, in which I play, among other things, Jesus. And we deal with multiple timelines wherein Jesus and Santa get swapped in history, and hilarity ensues. So if you like things to be offensive and delightful, come
and
check out that show.
Judging by the headshot on your profile, dead sexy.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
You wear the shit out of that crown of thorns, bud.
I really do, and it literally does hurt. It's pokey as fuck.
Well, yeah, because you're dedicated to your craft.
That's right. So that's the thing.
The handwriting.
Yeah.
All right, you can find us on the newly prettified, courtesy of Chip Lineburner, horrorshowhotdog.com.
Yeah, yeah.
We are on Reddit at HSHD. We're Horror Dog on Facebook and at Horror Hot Dog on Twitter. And you can actually leave comments and shit on the webpage, too. So anywhere you want to talk to us is totally cool. If you love the show, please give us a rating on iTunes or Stitcher. If you don't love it, you don't have to listen to it anymore. We release you.
And we could tease a little bit, I think, at this point. We got some changes coming up for the new year. coming up once we get past the new year here, there will be some changes, additions, and modifications to how Horror Show Hot Dog works. Don't worry, we're not going anywhere. We're just giving you more delicious Horror Show hot dogginess.
So, we're putting a little chili on that hot dog.
Yeah, be tantalized, be curious, be ready to, you know, enjoy even more shit and tell more people about us, because we're awesome.
And be our guest.
Yes.
Put our service to the test. And I've been Josh this entire time, and I'm just going to say bye.
I'm pretty sure I've been Matt, and for that, I'm sorry.
This is Charlie Dunn and Austin. Take care of a good week. Real, real fast, if you're looking for buying gifts and whatnot, both Mondo, Death Waltz, that whole crew are doing free shipping on all their records domestically. So all their amazingly... I've got a bunch of them, and there's a bunch more that I would love to have, but I also like to eat. So can't have all the records. They're doing free shipping. Scream Factory's doing a good deal on stuff. The other Wax... Fuck! I can't think of another name. They're doing a deal as well. Wax... something. People who do wax work... damn. Whatever. It's a record label that makes horror records. There's like three of them, so you'll find it. Anyway, they're doing a deal as well as Scream Factory. So, you know, those guys are out there. And a lot of this republishing stuff, you know, if you don't know this... is not cheap. So the Vinegar Syndromes of the world and Scream Factors of the world and Mondos of the world, they are worth giving some money to if you're into that kind of stuff and restoring and doing these things. So check out their deals between now and Christmas, because it's a good way to save a little bit of dough. But like I said, supporting this stuff is actually very important, because this shit ain't cheap. So check those out. It's just quite cool. Waxwork Records. Cool. There we go. Fucking A. My brain.
We did it.
Take care, Charlie.
Okay. Good night. Thank you.